Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome back. Another episode of Here's the Catch as we move to week 18, the final one of the regular season. 49ers trying to push the winning streak to 10 games as they transition to playoff football. And obviously, it's been a somber week around the NFL with the Damar Hamlin situation. As we record this, though, there has been some better news. Supposedly, he's awake in the hospital and somewhat responsive, at least, holding hands with family members. So the more good news that pours in, obviously, the better. And that's something that we're going to continue to monitor. It's something the NFL and all teams are continuing to monitor. Matt, we were in the locker room on Wednesday for the first time since the incident, and obviously that was front and center on everybody's mind, and we talked to several players about it, and it's it's one of the tough things that is part of playing such a violent sport like football. You run into scary situations on the field, and this probably was the scariest that either you or I have seen, or even Dennis too, right, over the time that we've been watching football, or in Dennis's case, playing football.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and these guys have had to reconcile what they do with head trauma, which is absolutely serious. This was so sudden, though. It's different. I don't think a lot of players, certainly I didn't, recognize this as a possible risk. This looks like it's what they call commotio cordis, when you take a shot to your chest and it just happens to be in that literally that split second where the heartbeat is in a certain phase and it causes the heart to stop beating. And I'm going to quickly pass this to Dennis and ask what your thoughts were when it was happening and maybe your kind of experiences with, playing a game and seeing a teammate or an opponent go down with what's clearly a very serious injury and how you deal with that, during the game when it's that traumatic.
Yeah, and, I've never been a part of a situation like we saw on television with this young man. And, first looking at the play, I thought maybe he got his bell rung. He got, the wind knocked out of him. And immediately, my wife, who is a San Francisco firefighter, looking at the reaction of the players around, she said, they're doing CPR. And I've never seen anyone have CPR on them, but I guess it is a pretty horrific scene when you see someone getting CPR. And you could see it, the emotion of the players, the crying, the hands over on the head, and folks dropping to their knees and praying because his heart stopped. Never been a part of that. And Erica was saying to me that it's something that you just don't forget when you see someone getting CPR. I was part of a couple of football games. I saw I was in the pile when BY had his ankle broke or his leg broke. And I was also part of a Monday night football game against the Raiders when, I forget the running back's name, Ken Norton Jr. fell across his leg and he snapped his leg. We could hear the bone break. So, but I've never been a part of anything like this. And it makes you kind of evaluate kind of what we're all doing, you know, as athletes and as we cover it. I mean, we know this is a tough sport. We know injuries are part of it. But we never think about life and death. We never think about someone's heart stopping on the football field. So it was traumatic, and it really made me kind of think, kind of reevaluate. You know, when I say things like go to battle, fighting in the trenches, going to war, things like that, because when you're in the locker room and you're getting dressed, you never think that, you know, your heart's going to stop on a football field. I mean, you're aware of the injuries, you could get hurt. But you never think of life and death, and that's what we're facing here. And the news is good about this young man, and I just hope he has a full recovery. But we as a community, we really have to kind of rethink kind of how we approach football. I mean, these guys are bigger, they're stronger, they're faster, and when they collide, things like this, I think, might happen more often. Because of the fact the athletes are so much bigger, so much stronger, and so much faster. But it was crazy watching it because Erica said right away, he's getting CPR. And she could tell by the looks of these of the players, the looks on their face and the emotion. So I've never been part of it, but it's really kind of made me rethink how I approach football, how I talk about football. Because it's, like Erica said, it's something you can't unsee. It's something that these guys are going to have in their mind and their memory for a very long time.
Which is exactly why that game had to be canceled at that point. You know, I think Kyle Juszczyk said it really concisely in the locker room yesterday. He said once we heard CPR was being performed, that completely changed the rules and the process by which everybody was, you know, thinking about this incident. We've seen horrific stuff on the football field, obviously a lot of it. With the head injuries, you mentioned, Dennis, the Bryant Young leg injury, which I believe was in 1998. That was a gruesome one, just shattered his leg. And I think it was Ken Norton Jr.'s helmet that went right into Bryant Young's leg on that play. It was Monday Night Football. And I do know a lot of you, his teammates, went to the hospital to see Bryant Young after. I still remember watching that game. It's kind of seared into my memory. So, I mean, football's got a long history of this. It's a violent sport. I mean, you really expect nothing different because of the nature of the sport. But then this incident on Monday night with the CPR being performed, the heart actually stopping, that, you know, took this to a different level. And, you know, I think that you nailed it too when you said that the looks on the players' faces, just the despair, the sadness, Josh Allen there crying. It was one of those situations where, man, everybody was like, okay, this just got real at a level that we haven't really seen on an actual football field. However, Matt, the 49ers, there is a history of tragedy within the 49ers organization, and I believe you were covering the team, right, in the mid-2000s, when it struck the 49ers in their locker room.
Yeah, the 2005 team, which of course is famous for drafting Alex Smith out of Utah with the number one overall pick. They also brought in an undrafted guy, also from Utah, a teammate of Smith's in college. His name is Thomas Herrien. He was probably not going to make the team, maybe like a practice squad type, but after a preseason game in Denver, he was in the locker room just, you know, changing along with everybody else and keeled over, collapsed. And they couldn't revive him. And, I remember it very, very clearly. I mean, they were on top of him, whisking him away into an ambulance, performing CPR. Dr. John York, who's a pathologist by trade, that's why we call him doctor, who's got, you know, went to medical school, has medical training. He was one of the people there who rushed in and performed CPR on Thomas Herring and cut off his uniform. It was extremely graphic and just horrific. It was something that, you know, a lot of the questions we were asking the players on Wednesday were asked for a full week that August. I mean, how do you get back on the field knowing that your teammate died following the game? Now, I should point out that very different. It was determined that Thomas Herring had a pre-existing heart condition, he had a heart attack, which is different than cardiac arrest. And they never got his heart revived. He died a few minutes later on the way to the hospital. This was a case where the heart beat. There was an arrhythmia where, this is the suspicion of Damar Hamlin, is that this blow that he took happened at just a certain point that sort of knocked that heartbeat off rhythm, knocked it out altogether. Luckily they had, the right personnel, they had the paddles, defibrillators on hand to get that heart restarted. So it's sort of different than what happened with Thomas Herring, but it's something that kind of shows that, this absolutely can happen. And David, you and I were talking, at the stadium. This is something that tends to happen to younger men, boys, 13 to 15 years old, most of whom play baseball and get a baseball that goes right into their chest, and that knocks that heartbeat off of rhythm. It happens in lacrosse. I've heard of a lacrosse goalie that happened to, and they didn't revive him. It happens in hockey, and probably football is one of the less likely sports that this is going to happen, because it has to be that precise, a very precise hit. Obviously, during a very, very minute, we're talking 1/100th of a second time during that heartbeat.
Yeah, the heart is constantly shifting angles very, very slightly, but it has to be at the exact right or wrong position, I guess you could say, when it hits. This has happened in the NHL in 1991, and the player made a full recovery afterwards, so that's a good sign, obviously, here for Damar Hamlin. But I read something that said on average 3 to 4 Little League baseball players around the country die per year because they get hit by a baseball just the wrong time in the chest. And, the bad news, really bad news there, is that you have, Little League baseball fields generally don't have defibrillators. You generally don't have a ton of medical personnel or any medical personnel on site. And when something like this happens, you've got to have that CPR, have the defibrillator, have everything there within minutes, right? It needs to be there very, very quickly. And that's, that's the one positive out of this Damar Hamlin situation, is that it was in an NFL stadium where you had medical personnel around. You had the ambulance there. You had the doctors, and they're able to get to work on him right away. So, we can all hope, right now, that quick response ends up allowing Damar Hamlin to pull through. It's not only about the quick response, it's about what happens after, and the treatment that he's getting right now in that Cincinnati hospital, and all of that has to go right. And we have a situation right now where the reports that we're getting on Thursday morning so far have been positive, and I think that everybody surrounding football right now is waiting with bated breath, hoping, Dennis, that this continues trending in the right direction.
It was really good to see how both these teams, Buffalo and Cincinnati, kind of approached it. I mean, the game was over after that incident, right? I mean, it was no thoughts on either sideline that this game was going to continue. And just to see the coaches on the field, the players on the field, and then in the tunnel at the locker rooms, just kind of making that decision that we can't go on. And it became bigger than the game. The fans stuck around. I think the fans stuck around because, they wanted some information. They wanted to know what was going on. But it was the game was over, and the NFL made the call. But I think I think if the NFL said that the game would have to go on, I think these coaches, just the way they were communicating with each other, it looked like they were doing the right thing, and they were, you know, I don't think an NFL game has ever been canceled before during the football game, but I think it was a good call. Just the way it was handled in a way that it wasn't about the football, it wasn't about big business NFL, it was about this young man, and also, you know, the players on each team, the thing that they had saw on the field, and to see a teammate, a brother on the field kind of getting CPR and not really knowing kind of what he was or if he was even still alive. So I was really impressed with the way both teams kind of handled it and canceled the football game.
And, well, you know, moving forward into this weekend, obviously, the players are all going to have to – everybody around the league who saw this, and I know that the 49ers players were a country away, so you're not right there. You don't see the most horrific details of the incident, but I think everybody was shaken by this who was, you know, at least somewhat involved with football. So it's going to be important for players to be able to get back into the right headspace and be able to play again, because – you know, we talk about this almost every time when we see something really serious, the stretcher come out on the football field. It's really important that, you know, you don't step back out in between the lines going 60, 70%, going out there with some reservations, because that is where you expose yourself to more potential harm. It's a really, really tough sport to play. From a psychological perspective, Kyle Shanahan talks about it a lot. He talks about having to go into a dark place. And by that, he means, well, you have to be able to psychologically filter out all the potential negatives to actually play the sport. That's, you know, that's what maybe the great challenge of playing football, at least, you know, in between the ears. So players around the whole league are, you know, going to have to be able to enter that space again this weekend. And the 49ers and Cardinals are playing at 1:20 on or 1:25 on Sunday. So it's one of the battles that NFL players have to play face on a week in, week out basis. You know, I guess one more thing that I kind of wanted to touch on, Dennis, when you were playing, you know, how long did it take you before each game to kind of get into that mode, you know, just to be ready to play football so that you wouldn't be, you know, extra vulnerable to something if you were kind of, you know, just kind of half-assing it? How long did it really take you to get prepared?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I go back to like high school and in college, and in high school it was still kind of fun. So it was like the day of the game, you kind of got yourself, you know, in that football mode. And in college, it was a couple days because you know you had your school, you had to do all your study tables, you had to get your mind right for class and test and all those different things. And then you took a couple days to play a Saturday football game because of the other stuff. Now, in the NFL, I mean, you got to get yourself mentally ready. You got an entire week, and that's your entire focus is on that Sunday. And football is unique because unlike basketball and baseball and hockey, other sports where you play, you know, series, you play every other night or every night. It seems like you kind of always kind of have to be in the zone. With football, you got an entire week and you kind of explode on a football field for 3 hours on Sunday. So, I mean, you got a whole week to get that mindset. And I don't know what other teams do, but the 49ers stay, you know, home games, you know, you stay at a hotel, you get your mind right, you're away from your family, all the other distractions, even away, you're with your teammates, but at night you're in your room and you're getting ready, you're looking at your playbook, you're getting ready for a football game. So, you know, it's changed over the years, but the NFL is great because you have an entire week to get your mind ready to play in a football game. But you have that night before, then you have that ride over. Here, you know, when we played home games, it was always me, BY, and Dana Stubblefield, we would always drive in together into Candlestick, and we would always, you know, coming over Oyster Point, coming down the freeway, you could see Candlestick over at Candlestick Point coming down the 101. And that was the time we turned off the radio and we just kind of focused, driving into the stadium. So, you know, it's different for everybody, but it usually took me, you know, 2 days to get ready for a football game.
Wow. I have to ask, Dennis, you know, Candlestick is not there anymore. I mean, what are your emotions like when you pass it, when you're driving on 101 these days and you look over to Candlestick Point and it's just missing?
It's a hole in the ground. And I live close to Candlestick Point. It's different because, you know, with the food pantry, we have a lot of pantries over in Candlestick Point, Alice Griffith housing development, which is right next door. And there's a park there, Gilman Park, that sits right next to the old Candlestick. So I see it quite a bit. And it's just, you know, it's just a hole in the ground. There are some signs that are still up, some parking signs. The one sign that they kind of kept up says, "Welcome to Candlestick Park, home of the world champion San Francisco 49ers." And it still stands there. So it gets a little emotional. And, you know, I think that I spent 8 years of my life, my kids grew up in that space. And basically, it's just a hole in the ground. And during the pandemic, it became a spot for a lot of RVs that were parked out there. So, you know, I see it quite a bit. But every time I go by it, I still reminisce about the times, you know, getting into Candlestick, you know, the fans, all the housing around it, all the people parking, all the hot dogs, people selling food, you know, out the front door. So there's a lot of great memories, but, you know, it's basically a hole in the ground right now. And, you know, it hurts a little bit, but, you know, it's still there. I still call it Candlestick. But, you know, it's just minus the stadium, but it's there. It's just a hole in the ground. So there's a lot of memory, a lot of really good memories there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm glad that the parking sign's still there. I was there a couple of years ago and drove around and was hoping that that wasn't just like waiting to be torn down. I think they got to keep that up. I mean, even if they rebuild that area with condos or whatever the plan is, how cool would it be to live with a condo area where there's just this old rusted sign, you know, that says, "Welcome to Candlestick Park." I think you got to, like, yeah. I hope the city somehow protects that with landmark status. I'll tell you what, though. I hate it the way they demolished it. I wish they would have imploded it. I wish it would have... At least that's cool when they implode something, you know, and then it's gone in a second. The way that it died a slow death was pretty painful to me, because I love just iconic sporting venues wherever they are. You know, I just think there's something cool. Any city I go to, I try to go to the ballpark. I hope that, you know, the baseball team is playing at home, and I could go see their baseball stadium. And, you know, Candlestick obviously was one of the most iconic venues in American sports, between the 49ers and the Giants, Willie Mays and Willie McCovey, all the way to Barry Bonds. And then, you know, your 49ers teams, Dennis, winning all those Super Bowls. As it took like a year and a half for them to take that apart. It was like they're taking it out apart piece by piece. I had to do that drive a lot during that year and a half, and I just started taking 280. I'd go out of my way. I would take 101 to 380 to 280 to not see it. It was depressing. Because every single time you drove by, a little bit less of it would be there. I mean, it was like torture. So, good on you for being able to look at that. Because I just don't like when stadiums die, an especially slow death. But
it was tough.
They had that. You guys remember that statue? I want to call it a statue of a kind of Christian warrior or crusader that was right in front of one of the entrances. I wonder what happened to that. That seems like something that could be preserved from that stadium. And I don't know. I think it should be relocated to Levi's, but I lost track of where that is right now.
Yeah, I think it was actually donated to one of the churches in the city. I remember someone telling me that. But you know, that sign is still there, and I think they are trying to preserve that sign, because it's been up for a long. I mean, it's made it through a pandemic. It's made it through all the young kids with the graffiti, but it's still standing, and it looks bad, but it's still there, and it's the only sign, Candlestick sign, that's still up there. And you know, talk about Candle. I mean, she was old, and she was, you know, she was kind of beat down, but you know, it's so many memories and so many, you know, games, classic games, Giants and 49ers played there. And I just remember the home field advantage we had was, if the tide was high, you know, in between the hashes, it was always really wet and muddy. And other teams didn't know that, who came into the stadium, and they were always slipping around. And we always knew it. We always had the longer cleat on. It was always that first half watching visiting teams come in and just kind of, you know, slosh around in the middle of the football field. And then preseason playing on that hard, you know, Giants infield was always a treat. So, you know, there's so many memories with Candlestick, and you're right, the way they took it apart wasn't right. I can remember getting a phone call saying, you know, you can come and grab some seats, or you can grab, you know, some turf. And they just kind of, you know, they just took her apart real slow. And then I understand kind of what they were doing, given the community pieces of it, because it was such a, you know, such an icon, or such a iconic thing in the Bayview neighborhood. But it just looked bad when people were just kind of, you know, grabbing pieces of her, taking, you know, concrete, taking chairs, taking, you know, dugout stuff. So It was kind of rough watching her fall apart. Like I said, so many great memories. And not only, you know, for me, football players and fans, but the community around Candlestick, they miss Candlestick. If you go in the city, in the Bayview, you see so many different murals on the wall, and everything includes a picture of Candlestick. So it's really missed, and I really wish the city could have figured that out, to keep the 49ers here, because, you know, she's missed big time.
Yeah, I mean, it was special coming down through the Bayview and seeing, you know, the, just like you said, the energy coming out of all the houses. Like, it's an actual San Francisco neighborhood, and then you're walking up to the stadium, whereas now they're playing, you know, they're surrounded by office parks in Santa Clara, so there's no way that you could recreate that kind of fabric, that vibe. And you hear all the stories, you know, as a Dwight Clark's memorial service back in 2018, and people were sharing stories of after the win against the Cowboys where he made the catch, how just the Bayview, and it was totally celebratory after every big win, but especially after that one, you know, in January 1982. Some of the stuff that was said at that memorial service was, Dwight Clark basically gave all these kids in the Bayview a memory of celebration that they'll never forget, you know, and that really touched me. And it was like, wow, it's like this all happened here. This, you know, they were right next to that stadium, and that's never going to happen again. You know, I was every time you drive by, you're kind of reminded of that. But, you know, times change, new stadiums are built. That's kind of how the world works. I think that the Oakland Coliseum might have been the last one from that era, right? It's still standing, but obviously not hosting an NFL team anymore. Last weekend, we saw the 49ers play in the Raiders' new home, Allegiant Stadium, which, by the way, is really, really nice. And this weekend, we're going to see the 49ers play in what's no longer a new home. It's almost 10 years old, but they're going to be back at Levi Stadium, not for the last time this year, but for the last time this regular season against the Arizona Cardinals. And no, we're not dedicating a whole lot of time to this game because I don't think this game deserves a lot of time to be dedicated to it. The 49ers are 14-point favorites. They maybe should be larger favorites. This is not a situation, in my opinion, where the Cardinals have star power like the Raiders to be able to keep this game close. I think if this game is close, it's the 49ers' own fault. It's not something that I'll credit Darren Waller, Josh Jacobs, and Devontae Adams and Jared Stidham for, which I did last week. I thought those guys played great games for the Raiders, really exposed some 49ers' weaknesses. But the Cardinals are going to be starting their fourth quarterback of the year, David Blau, in this game. They're not going to have DeAndre Hopkins, who's out with a knee issue. Buda Baker is on IR with a broken shoulder. He's one of their best defensive players. If there's anything that, you know, might inspire the Cardinals a little bit, it's J.J. Watt, who's going to be playing his final career game. But there's a reason that J.J. Watt's playing his final career game, and it's because J.J. Watt is not the J.J. Watt of 5 or 6 years ago. We've already seen the 49ers blow out a Cardinals team that was much stronger, at least health-wise, a few weeks ago in Mexico City. And the 49ers have a lot at stake still in this game, obviously playing for seeding, and the Cardinals don't at 4-12. So it's about as lopsided of a matchup as it could be, Matt. And perhaps it's just as important to talk about the simultaneous matchups, right, that are happening, namely the Eagles playing the New York Giants.
Yeah, I was going to ask Dennis what kind of lift he thinks that the Cardinals will get with J.J. Watt, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, one-time Walter Payton Man of the Year, just kind of underscores how much esteem he's held in around the league, how much that can lift the team up. I remember B.Y.'s last game was in 2007, I remember he had a really – nice. I mean, that was a terrible 49ers team, and I think they won that last game, or maybe they didn't, but it was their last home game. Yeah, I think they won their last home game against the Buccaneers that year, and obviously they dedicated that win to B.Y. The players carried him off the field. Jeff Ulbrich, those guys kind of feted B.Y., and that was enough to kind of take a very, very bad 49ers team over the top and win. Dennis, does that you think that will affect how the Cardinals play in this game?
I think going into the game, maybe. But I think if the 49ers do what they're supposed to do or play the way they've been playing at least the last 9 weeks, I think you lose that after a while. But that could motivate. I can remember J.J. Watt, a young J.J. Watt, and he would I was so impressed by him because he would take over football games, right? I mean, he would rush the passer, he would tackle for loss, and then he would drop off and drop back in coverage, and he would intercept a couple balls or bat down some balls. So, you know, he would take over football games, and then of course the injuries come. And he's not the same player, but he's still a very good defensive lineman. Only because, you know, he is a veteran. You know, you're not going to fool him with any blocking schemes. He's got good technique. But I remember when he used to just dominate football games. But this is, you said it, Dave, this is not a very good Cardinal football team. They're missing a lot of their star power. Coming in, they're going to be on the road. This is their last game. They're ready for the season to end. Start, getting ready for next season, getting ready for the draft. But if you let them come into the game and you give them confidence, like I said, if you give them something to play for, a reason to think that you can win a football game on the road against a divisional team, they'll do it. So the 49ers have to be, even though this week has been, a different week, with the incidents that kind of happened in front of everyone in national football. But we are always taught, you're taught to kind of, to have a short memory, right? To forget things like that and to move on and continue to play football. So if the 49ers come out and they play the way they can play, the way they should play, they should be able to shut this team down early in the first half, I think, first quarter. But if you give any team any kind of confidence or any kind of belief they can win a football team, they'll do it. Because they are professional athletes. I mean, they're paid to play football. And if you make it competitive, any team can beat any football team on any given Sunday. So it's going to be important that you get the 49ers have their mindset, in the right spot. I mean, you're still looking for seeding. I mean, there's still an opportunity, not paying attention to any other football games, control your own destiny. And you come out and win football games and you let the chips fall where they may. But it's going to be important that they come out and understand that there's an opportunity to get a number one seed, and that means a bye. And that's huge when you start playing in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, we could look at the scenarios here. If the 49ers beat the Cardinals and Philadelphia, they're two touchdown favorites over the New York Giants because the Giants are locked into the sixth seed, so they don't have much to play for. So Philadelphia is a big-time favorite. So assuming the two-touchdown favorites win, that's 49ers over Arizona and Philly over New York, then there are three possibilities of who the 49ers will play in the wild card round. They'd host each of these teams, either the Packers, the Seahawks, or the Lions. I list them in order of probability because the Packers are actually the likeliest 49ers opponent because Green Bay, all they have to do is beat the Lions and they're in. But if Green Bay loses to Detroit, then it's between Detroit and Seattle. And if Seattle wins and Detroit wins, then it's Seattle. But if Seattle loses to the Rams, then it would be the Lions. So the least likely is the Lions. The second least likely is the Seahawks. And the most likely 49ers opponent in the wild card round is the Packers. Now, if something crazy happens and the Giants beat Philadelphia and the 49ers beat the Cardinals, then the 49ers will have that bye. That's obviously the dream scenario for the 49ers, but you can't say that it's likely with the Eagles being two touchdown favorites over the Giants. Now, what happens if the 49ers somehow lose this game? Well, then you start talking about Minnesota. The 49ers leapfrogged the Vikings last week, but the Vikings can leapfrog them right back if the 49ers don't win. The Vikings play the Bears. It is highly likely that the Vikings win because the Bears are starting Nate Peterman and not Justin Fields. So if the 49ers lose to the Cardinals and the Vikings beat the Bears, the 49ers will drop to the 3 seed, which would mean that they host the 6 seed New York Giants. So there still is a small chance of the 49ers host the New York Giants as the 3 seed. And if the 49ers lose and Chicago also wins, so Minnesota also loses, that means that we just go back to the 49ers being at that 2 seed, and the 3 options would be Green Bay, Seattle, or Detroit. So slightly complicated, but understandable, Matt. Just in order of likelihood, I think that we're probably going to see Packers 49ers in the wild card round. We can't be sure. A lot could still happen, but if you had to list it, then Packers 49ers rematch happened last year after the 49ers snuck into the playoffs and won a round. Packers will have some chance at payback. Now they're the team that has a chance to sneak into the playoffs, and if they played the 49ers, then that'd be quite the role reversal from 2021.
Yeah, of course it's going to be the Packers. They have to play the Packers. That happens every postseason the 49ers make. I mean, all this talk, and I'm sure there'll be tons of debate about it, across the Bay Area and California. But the bottom line is that if you're a team expecting to play in the Super Bowl, if you're a team that's on a long winning streak that the 49ers are on, you're confident about any team that you're playing in the opening round, especially when you're at home. I think if Detroit beats Green Bay and Detroit is that team, I think that would probably be a nice scenario for the 49ers. Actually, if the 49ers somehow lost to the Cardinals and they had to host the Giants, that'd probably be the best matchup just on paper. The Giants are very one note, and the 49ers defense really kind of excels against that type of team. I'll tell you what, though, if there's one team that sort of, or one game in recent years that really haunts the 49ers, it's that opening week game in last season, 2021, to the Lions, where they were blowing out the Lions in Detroit, and they took Fred Warner off the field and Nick Bosa and all their stars. And all of a sudden, the Lions came back, and they had to scramble, the 49ers did, and get those starters back into the game. Really gave them a lot of nervousness, and I think it still echoes now. I mean, you're always wondering, why is Shanahan still playing Christian McCaffrey? Why is Fred Warner still in the game? It's because they have bad memories of what happened in Detroit. So maybe they could have an opportunity, Dennis, to exercise those demons if they played the Lions. I think on paper, that's another team that the 49ers should very handily beat.
Like I said, you control your own destiny. Just go out and win on Sunday and see where it ends up. I mean, you're in the playoffs. Now you have an opportunity to challenge for a championship, and that's got to be the mindset, and I really do think it's going to be Green Bay, and it hurts my heart because a hot Green Bay team scares the heck out of me. I think it's just a tough matchup for the 49ers, and you know they've played Green Bay really well over the years, but you know, a cocky and a in rhythm Aaron Rodgers scares me because he can make, you know, so many things happen. It doesn't matter what receivers he has out there. He figures out a way to play well. But I would love, I'm going to say, I would love to see Seattle come here in the first round and have a 49er Seattle game at Levi's Stadium. I'd like that team. I'd like the way they play. I like Pete Carroll. I like the hatred between the Seahawks. I would love to see that matchup, but I don't want to see a hot Aaron Rodgers come into. But it's gonna happen. I'm pretty sure it's gonna happen. But you control it. You can do it. You win a football game, but you're in the playoffs, and now you got to start. You know, it has to go up a notch. I mean, the 49ers have been playing really well the last 9 weeks. You just got to keep that up, and it starts with your defense. You have to figure out, you know, that cornerback position. How do you help that young corner in coverage? And up front, you just got to get after the passer, and that's the bottom line. It starts with your defense, but the 49ers have to understand that it's the playoffs now. And, you know, they've been in a situation. You know, Kyle Shanahan's been in a situation. He knows how to get these guys ready. But go out on Sunday, win this football game, and then start focusing on the playoffs, whoever the opponent might be. But I think it's going to be Green Bay.
Well, guys, this is just coming in. We have an update on DeMar Hamlin. The doctors have spoken in a press conference, and they essentially have credited the Bills medical staff for saving his life. They said that CPR was administered a minute after the event, which is obviously very, very quickly. And because of that, he obviously has what looks to be like an increasing chance to survive this. DeMar Hamlin was able to communicate with doctors via writing, and his first question for them, it sounds like, was who won the game? And doctors responded. This is according to Coy Wire. He used to play for Stanford, NFL guy who now is a journalist. And he said the doctors responded saying, you won the game of life. That was their response to Damar Hamlin. But some touching stuff, obviously, and really, really good news. And, you know, this really does relate to a lot of what we were talking about earlier, Matt, about the immediate medical attention. And it sounds like everybody that was involved with on the medical side has been doing one hell of a job here over the past few days. And obviously it's taken a lot of strength for Damar Hamlin to pull through to where we are at right now. I don't think that he's out of the woods yet. I wouldn't, you know, say that, but this is certainly really, really encouraging stuff.
Yeah, and I think one of the lessons or something that we're going to be reading about in the wake of this is, you know, that everybody should get CPR training, and that there should be more defibrillators, you know, in various places like Little League fields and things like that, because I think we're going to realize that it was that quick CPR and the paddles that saved them. They got that heart going. And I know that it may have kicked out one more time. That was what the reporting was. But that's, you know, that's it. I mean, your heart stops beating for a certain number of minutes, and your chances of recovery just plummet. So I know I'm thinking about that. Dennis, you're out in the community all the time. Do you know CPR? Is that something that you're interested in?
Yeah, and you know, like I said, my wife was a paramedic and now firefighter, so she kind of forces me to do a lot of these things.
Yeah,
and it's a good thing, right? I mean, I've got CPR training, I got triage training, I've got the earthquake stuff. I've even during this time with all this weather. I mean, last night we had to pack up our emergency book bag just in case, you know, I don't know, something happens, the house floods out. So yeah, I've been training a lot of that stuff. I just don't know, you know, in that moment, I still don't know in that moment if I could actually do it. So that's the only thing. I mean, I've been trained, I've been certified, but I just don't know in that moment, you know, if I would have, you know, if I saw someone in that situation, could I do it? And that's why, you know, when I look at these first responders and the folks that do it for a living, you know, it amazes me that you have it in you to kind of do it. So yeah, it's all good. It's good training. And I was really surprised, Dave, when you said that in little leagues, you know, these young people are dying on these little league baseball teams. And it's too bad the coaches don't have that training or have that medical staff on hand to handle those situations. But yeah, you're right. It's important to have it. I think we all should have it because you could save a life in the long run.
Yeah, there's been an increasing rollout of defibrillators to public parks and places like that. I see them more and more often here over the past few years. You know, they have the defibrillator up against the wall. And, you know, that's, and more CPR training for adults who are in charge, right? So coaches and lifeguards and all that, that's all extremely important because you know, these medical emergencies can strike at any time, especially if you're playing a contact sport. And you know, even baseball is a contact sport. If the baseball is hitting you in the chest, then that is contact right there. So in this situation, though, it, you know, knock on wood, say a prayer, you know, whatever your preferred method is here, it does seem that Damar Hamlin had the exact right amount of care at the right time, ready to handle what was a very, very frightening incident, to at least give him the best possible chance of surviving. So we'll continue to keep him and his family and, you know, all the players around the NFL in our thoughts, because again, to stay as safe as possible on that field, you've got to be able to you know, overcome that mentally, because if you can't, then all of a sudden the game gets a whole lot more dangerous. So that's the somber mood with which we're approaching this final week of the regular season. Anyway, for Matt Barrows and Dennis Brown, this is David Lombardi. We will talk to you after the 49ers play the Cardinals. That will be when the regular season is wrapped up, and we'll set the table for the postseason with that podcast. So talk to you next time on Here's the Catch.